welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 331, another special edition. You get a two for Vegas weekend from us. You got the auction show that dropped Friday evening, and we got a doozy for you for a main event, live main event recap. We did this last year, went over very well. This is a big one, folks. We're going to talk about our thoughts from the draft. We're going to talk to five or six people that drafted. Surprises to be unleashed there. You'll be, I think, thoroughly shocked by at least one person that is on the show that releases his knowledge on certain subjects of the fantasy baseball world. And much, much more. Before we get to that, you can follow me on the Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHG. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Couldn't be better, man. It's main event day in Vegas, walking through this giant room of eight drafts going on at the same time was damn cool, because we kind of got the experience last year in Vegas, but not all the drafts were in the same room. It was split up a little bit. So this was one. There was one part of the room where you could see six out of the eight draft boards at once, and each, like, they have giant projectors lined up before each, in front of each draft, and you've got the stickers that go for every pick, and it's like little, like, lightning flashes everywhere when you're, like, looking out in the sky. It's just pick, pick, pick here, there. So it's just really cool to see drafts at different paces, different builds. We'll talk about some of that stuff on the show today, but really cool experience to take in for the first time of all of those drafts being in one room. It was sweet, man.
Yeah, it was really cool to see it all come to fruition in a big area in the middle. We can kind of congregate in or go elsewhere. You put together a live ADP tracker for the main event in per, like, I'm watching
just
this
in
going
the thing
on.
Working on the code. Just
I looked
sitting
over
in a chair.
I looked over at him because on Friday he was updating something. He's, oh, it's the ADP tracker. I'm like, oh, cool. Okay, that's how you do it. Interesting. Still had no idea how he did it, but he did it. And then today we're kind of just taking a break because it's about the first break for the drafters, 10 rounds in, and want to sit down for a few minutes. And here's Ryan, and I see code again on his computer, laptop, and I'm like, what are you doing now? Oh, I'm creating a Vegas main live update, you know, ADP tracker. I'm like, what the heck? It's impressive, folks. It's all I'm going to say. It was very quick to the point.
Yeah, I linked it. I posted it out on Twitter. I posted it in the Discord as well. Basically, just tracking each pick from each league, highlighting. So similar to the ADP tracker, right? Just highlighting the min and max and ADP, so we can kind of see that. We've got that up in front of us. But yeah, I didn't totally make it from scratch, but it was a good kind of rush job to get it out there.
So we'll talk about some of our thoughts, kind of walk in the room, seeing what was going on. It was. The Connor Griffin news dropped about five rounds too late.
So that was the big one this year, right? Like, last year was Shane McClanahan before the draft. This year was Connor Griffin being sent to the minors. Yeah, shortly after he was picked in a bunch of these leagues.
Yeah, because Connor Griffin primarily was a 12th round pick. Like, his ADPs were, he had a 140 overall, but for the most part it was
160. Earliest was 140, latest was 186. Yeah, so Connor Griffin 160.
Like, for the most part, just like glancing naked eye, a lot of 12th rounds is what Connor Griffin was doing. And literally it was like round 17 or 18 when that news dropped. A lot of news this morning before the draft. We saw things like Parker Messick, all of a sudden he's a round 20 pick because he made the Guardians rotation. That was one that stood out in a big, big way. But I guess in general, Ryan, we'll just kind of talk about a few things. If anybody cares about prospects, it was Griffin, McConnell, Weatherholt in that order, as expected, about two rounds apart. That'll obviously change. But let's talk pitchers, because look at the top of the ADP. It was Ohtani 1, Judge 2. There's a part of the show later we'll talk about an Ohtani draft that went off the rails. But, yeah, Ohtani 1, Judge 2. But then there was two drafts where Bobby Witt went 4th. It was not both Tarek Skubal going 3rd, Ryan. We had a Paul Skeens 3rd overall in a draft, and it felt like in November it was a debate who was first between the two. It felt by like January 1st it was Tarek Skubal was the guy, issues. Well, there was one draft here that felt that was not the case.
And that was the board right in front of me. I remember that. I saw the person make the pick. I saw the pick. It was right in front of me. And, hey, whatever. Get your guys. If you like Skeens more than Skubal, it's not out of the question that Skeens could be the number one pitcher in fantasy this year. And you can't get both in a straight draft. So, whatever. That was cool to see. If we want to talk about pitching, that's usually the kind of the first place we start with these main event drafts. For me, it wasn't first-round pitching. Like, it pretty much stayed chalky to what we've been used to with Skubal, Skeens, and Crochet going in the first round. I didn't see too much. There were a couple other drafts where, like, Sanchez went.
I saw one. I saw one Christopher Sanchez. There's one. I saw one out of the eight drafts had four SPs in round one.
I just thought maybe, like, it would be kind of widespread that, like, Sanchez, Mason Miller, Yamamoto would be going in the first rounds for these. That really wasn't the case. So the biggest thing for me that was the case was so many teams rounds two through four. And you'll see that in some of the interviews that we're doing later in the episode. The pitch, like, a lot of teams went heavy pitching rounds two through four. One draft, there was in the second round, there were six closers that went. And obviously, anything that, you know, as players get pushed up, other players have to go down. It was fascinating to see how some of these teams that went pitching early, how they were able to still build a pretty decent hitting core after that, because everyone went pitching so early. And then it was also interesting, we interviewed a couple folks that went hitting heavy to start to see how they pivoted against that two through four round pitching run and how they were able to build rotations in like rounds five through 10. So that to me was kind of the biggest, I don't want to say shock factor, but like the biggest trend that I noticed was just those rounds two, three, and four were just so yellow. Again, yellow is the pitching position color on these draft boards. It was pretty wild to see.
Yeah, it was definitely a telling situation. As you mentioned, a lot of guys, that if they took a hitter early, you saw probably three out of the next four or definitely five picks were all pitchers with one reliever for the most part. The relief pitching market got a massive jump as expected. There was two of the eight drafts had Mason Miller at the 15th pick in round one. Didn't think I would see that. That stood out to me like, wow, we've escalated to this level of craziness. There was also one draft where Mason Miller didn't go at the first pick around the last pick around. He went the first pick around two. So if the person wanted to play games, he could have flipped it. But in that draft, you had Mason Miller at 2.1, Diaz at 2.2, Sanchez went at 2.3, then Cam Smith at 2.5. And there were six relief pitchers picked in round two of that draft alone. So it was just like utter chaos. We knew the markets were shifting pretty wild on that. But it was definitely a telling time of you better get your guys. And then one more thing real quick, and I'll pass it back, is Palencia, who's been one of the biggest risers, he was firmly gone by round four. Like there was no questions about that one.
Yeah, we saw that in the auctions. Daniel Palencia was like a $20 pitcher, and just, you know, he's healthy right now. He's really good, pitched well for Venezuela, and that's what you get. Some like just like particular players in terms of the bats that got pushed down. And I'm just looking at like ranges from min to max of some of these early hitters. Pico Armstrong was all over the board. He went as
the PCA part. So a guy that I got to hang out a lot with on Friday night at the MTM party, Joe Anthony, really, really good dude. He's played in this game a long time, very successful. And he had the second pick in the draft where Otani got misused, is what I'll say. And Joe Anthony went Judge, Johan Duran, Chris Sale, and PCA fell back to him with the second-to-last pick in round four.
Yeah,
like, that is crazy. So I made a point to walk around, and sorry to interrupt, but I walked around, and PCA for the most part was a round three, a couple of early round fours to get that fall to round four. That's why it's just so crazy watching some of these drafts, because some people are so hell-bent on, I got to get this many pitchers or this and that. There's some guys that just slip, and PCA was one of them.
PCA was one of them. That draft you mentioned, 59, he actually went later in another draft. He went to 60 in one of those. Ketel Marte was another one. We saw him go all over the place. Went as late as 61 with an ADP of 53. Ketel Marte's been a consistent like third rounder, and he got pushed down a lot. So there were values to be had. It was just, if you took hitters there and everyone else took pitching, you had to have a plan for how you were going to build your pitching staff in those middle rounds, because so many of them were gone.
Yeah, but then it's something about the main events. Like, we've been doing draft coverage all off season for everybody, and you know, you have your pockets of ADP we talk about and everything, but you look at just these eight drafts and the mins and the max that Ryan's talking about. Again, he put this out on Twitter. It's a free sheet you guys can go check out. It's not as tight as it feels like every other draft season was. Like, you couldn't say these guys are going within like the same round or maybe round and a half. So many guys were going two rounds later, three rounds later. It's minimum 15 picks, it felt like, for a full round. It was all over the board. So it was a combination, I think, of inflation to a point, but also get your guy season, which people talk about all the time in these main events, and it came to fruition. Like, there wasn't, we walked around, there wasn't like that craziness of like, okay, this guy went like got pushed up a time. But there was a lot of variance between the eight drafts that made, like, Ben Rice, just like I'm staring at him right now, he went at pick 46-1. He went before William Contreras. Ben Rice was the second catcher in this draft. I made a point to tell Ryan, like, this is blasphemy. We can't stand for this.
Blasphemy, he says.
Yeah. But then Ben Rice's his max was 73. He had a 27-pick difference, and he was usually the third or fourth catcher off the board. So that was just one guy. Of course, I looked at the catcher first, but it stood out to me as the gap. It happened throughout the draft. Like, really, there was pockets of positions you'd see taken within, like, a 2 to 3 round gap, but the order of said positions varied tremendously.
Yep. A couple of other players, it was just all over the board. Mookie Betts went as early as 38, went as late as 96. Yeah, and this one, his kind of counterpart at shortstop, they've been going together all draft season. CJ Abrams, my guy, as early as 53, as late as 100. Jackson Merrill was all over the place. So then Strider was, let's see, where's Strider at? 65 to 124. So he was all over the place. He went as early as 65, as late as 124, with an average of 100. So again, it's for a lot of these folks, it's their last draft of draft season. It's a lot of folks ponying up a lot of money and putting the research in, putting the work in to get their guys. And you saw that today. You saw a lot of variance with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, then there's some names everyone always wants to go, okay, so where did this riser go? And one of the big names the last 2 weeks was like Matt McClain. Matt McClain, like in auctions, is up to $12 for the most part. I think he might have went for 13 of mine, if not 12, on Friday night. But we've seen that price tag rise, ADP and everything. When it came to McClain on Saturday, he was a min of 110 and a max of 143. But in reality, it was 114, 110, 143, 136, 110, 130, 120. It was a lot of, it was basically, it was like two or three eights, two or three nines, and a 10. Like, it was spread out pretty evenly between the 8, 9, and 10 range. If you wanted Matt McClain, you had to be aggressive.
Yeah. Matt McClain went between, went right after Nico Horner and Sedane Rafaela at the position, right ahead of Luke Kuechel and Jose Altuve. So, Bubba's convulsing looking at his laptop, so I'll stop talking.
One of the biggest variances we have here, and it was surprising.
Stevis, yes. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, I just, that number just popped out to me, because that is Oregon Duck green, folks, and then a big rare steak red at the same time, if you know what I'm talking about here. Carlos Estevez, a lot of people have been talking this weekend about the velocity. Are we fine? Some guys are saying, oh, it's just how he ramps up. Don't worry about it. Like, a lot of people are concerned, and this was the ultimate here. His min was 84. He had an 84 and an 85, and the rest were 100, 118 and beyond. So he had a couple early. So he had a couple drafts where people were like, yeah, we're reaching, we're getting them. His max, there was a 160, 70, or was a 178. After that, 267. There is a draft where Carlos Estevez basically almost went at the second break by lunchtime at pick 20. That is wild to see. Like, that variance of a top 100 pick to a post 250 pick with a closer of all positions.
Yeah, and that's a little bit of the byproduct of just like, and we asked a few of our guests this, like, how do you incorporate spring training results into your analysis? Because we saw like Kode Senga get pushed up a lot. We saw Garrett Cole get pushed up, even though I think he's only pitched one start of one inning. We saw Shane McClanahan get pushed up quite a bit coming off of five innings, I believe, yesterday. So you've got a little bit more of a sample size in spring for these guys to show that they're maybe healthy or maybe not in Carlos Estevez's case. And if you get a room of folks that just want nothing to do with Carlos Estevez, which is a valid position to take, I could see him falling. 267 is a little
that,
much.
That was a lot. I was like, wow, okay.
But you could see it happening, because things do not look good, at least for the spring, for Carlos Estevez.
Well, because, like, let's think about it. So he had 267, right? And I think we know the draft this took place in, but Paul Sewald went at 193 as his men. And I think that just, because we'll discuss that one later. But, and his max was 303. So he had a large gap. But for the most part, Sewald sat in that 220 to 250 range, which would have all been ahead of Estevez. So yeah. I just want to use that as an example. Like, we're talking about a guy that we know for sure Estevez, well, we think for sure Estevez is the closer. Now his arm might fall off, or he's playing mind games with us. We don't know. Sewald, we're assuming, is the closer. It's like, who would you rather? It's that whole game right there. It came to fruition in this draft.
Yep. The other I guess, kind of big news one that we didn't mention so far was Kyle Stowers, who we knew yesterday during our auctions was pulled because of hamstring discomfort. This morning we learned he's going in for imaging. So Kyle Stowers dropped quite a bit. He had a huge spread. Kyle Stowers went as early as 122, as late as 275 in one of these Vegas main events for an average of 197. So the room predictably kind of cooled a bit on Kyle Stowers after the hamstring news this morning.
Yeah, one I really like to see was Blake Snow, because I haven't been able to wrap my head around why people are drafting Blake Snow. Even in auctions, he was still going for double digits. It was like people were in on Blake Snow. But it felt like today, on Saturday, that we saw a little more coming to Jesus with the fact that Blake Snow is on the IL. He's ramping up. There's still questions, so on and so forth. He had a min of 138, but after that, it was pretty much 165, 171 and beyond. He had a max of 234, so we could shrink that gap if you just take out, you know, Ryan likes to take out the worst start of the year, does do that bloom board.
Sometimes,
if we take,
yes,
if we take out that big, like, exceptional 138 pick, it's a much different ADP for Blake Snell. I just like to see that these players are sitting there going, okay, he is hurt, we're not going to play this game, and move him down, because I felt like he was not getting the push down he had been getting, and I thought he should be getting. Let's put it that way.
Yep. Agreed. Any other players stick out to you? Seemed like Samuel Bisaccia was rising quite a bit. He has his favorites been as early as 118, average of 147. I guess that's not too crazy.
No, there wasn't anything that stood out like nuts like we expected. Matt McClain, that we talked about, to get some love. James Wood is still a popular top four round pick. Like, that has not changed the
yep.
peripheral.
Yep.
We talk about it a lot on this show with interviews. I think it's brought up to almost every single guest we have, but the Kyle Bradish love is real. He's a fourth round pick. He's
as he should be.
Yeah. So
of course.
That's a real thing. He's going right around the Dylan Cease world. But yeah, for the most part, I didn't see anything too insane off the top of my head when we walked around. It wasn't like previous years, especially with the Connor Griffin news dropping after the fact. You couldn't really adjust to that, and that was kind of about the it there.
The other thing is, we'll kind of pivot away from player-specific stuff, more general stuff. I saw this in the reserves, and this, I think, an actionable takeaway for folks who are done drafting, but we have FAB coming up, right, on Sunday night and next week. We saw a lot of folks drafting to the schedule because we're less than a week until opening day. Rotations are starting to get solidified. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, rotations. We know the 1 through 5, and you can start kind of mapping out the schedule. And I think that's something, you know, if you're still drafting, you can do. For example, Walker Buehler, who made the Padres, seems to have a favorable schedule if things line up. He was taken in some of these reserve drafts as like a streamer, and then you drop him, A, if he doesn't look good in his first start, or B, once the matchups get tougher. Eric Lauer was another one, kind of going late. Not only made the Toronto rotation, but seems to have a favorable schedule starting out. So we started to see some of that as our collective brains switch from drafting like full season projections and full season outlooks to now switching into that, right, weekly grind type of mindset. We saw that quite a bit with some of these main event drafters drafting streamers as part of their reserves.
Yeah, there wasn't as many, let's take a shot on a guy. It was more like we're using them to stream guys. Like, sure, people are talking about Coles and Rodons and those guys, you know, that are coming.
Yeah,
Wheelers.
This is different. Yep.
They weren't taking their shots on like, hey, this prospect might get called up in 2 weeks or 6 months. We don't know. It's one of those things. It was strictly like, hey, we're going to stream them. If it works, good. If it doesn't, we drop them, move on with the plan. And there's a lot to be said about that. We talk about it time and time again. You use Ryan's, you know, draft tool, and it gives you the percentile targets for the 80th percentile and see where it goes there. So you need to accumulate stats, is my point. And if you use the weekly planner that is available right now through the Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, Ryan's got you ready to rock and roll for those potential streaming matchups that are coming your way. And then this next Thursday night, we got a full FAB show for you to rock and roll with, and we'll be using that planner and other tools as usual.
First of 27, so let's do it. Another underrated part. This is a little bit off the wall, and me being weird.
Oh yeah, God, I'm gonna go take a seat. This is for you, Ryan.
I love just kind of looking, and I didn't look like at, you know, players, whatever. I loved walking around looking at like.
Use the verbiage you wrote down in your phone.
People's setups. I might. It was really cool to see just how different people draft. We had one dude who's like, has to be Bubba's idol.
And he's actually like a very successful
really good player. I guess I haven't met him, whatever. We won't name names. I actually forget the name, but there was one dude who printed out literally hundreds of pieces of paper. And after every pick, he would like tear the paper up and throw it on the ground. And it was wild to see. That's this process. I'm not hating on it. It was just nuts. I was like, this is Bubba in a nutshell, just throwing papers everywhere. But then you also had like dual monitor setups at the actual thing. Obviously laptops, a lot of Rotolab. I saw some fork bats, saw some team tracker setups out in the wild. But it was cool to kind of look around and just like peek at different spreadsheets. Again, sounds bizarre, but it was, I'll say it, somewhat of a spreadsheet erotica out there where you're just looking at how people set things up. I thought that was kind of cool to just kind of walk around and see like how people format their spreadsheets and draft. Like, it sounds bizarre, but that was kind of cool to see live.
Yeah, no, it was kind of the opposite, it felt like, of the auction, where it was more my world, where you had your screen, and then it was all papers and pads, and it was I was in my element there, and Ryan was trying to adjust the best he could. Yeah, walking into a snake draft, which actually it makes sense if you really sit down and think about why it works better. The flow, the whole sheets, you can kind of follow your plan.
You have time to like update it throughout, and in an auction, you don't.
Yeah, so, but yeah, like Ryan's walking around, and it took maybe a half an hour. And I get this, Bubba, get over here.
Check out this dude's conditional formatting.
He's just sitting there, and I'm just like, if you need to like go back to your room for a few, like, we're good, buddy. Because he was in his happy place. I'm like, thank God Ben Titt isn't here right now. Because between the two of you, I'd have to just walk home. But hey, it was pretty great.
I'm not ashamed to admit I somewhat have a problem, but I love a good spreadsheet. And the spreadsheets were beautiful today. They were absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, they were. Anything else before we give it to, I believe it's six interviews we have for people to enjoy?
I don't think so. I guess it's pretty bad to end on that.
No, it's great because we're kicking it off with a guy that's going to bring the energy right out the gate, Dustin McComas. So,
enjoy the interviews. We had a ton of fun interviewing every week to kind of set the scene for you guys. It was all right, all these drafts in one room. We just kind of walked around, sat down at the table, looked at the draft board and interviewed these folks and kind of talked through their drafts. I hope you all enjoy it. I think it's some really good stuff from different folks that we've been hanging out with this weekend and last year and just had a really good time doing it. So appreciate the six folks taking the time to do it, because sometimes the last thing you want to do after a stressful draft is sit down and go on a podcast. So we really appreciate the time for these interviews. Hope you all enjoy it, and hope this kind of gives you, between this show and the auction show last night, for folks that weren't able to get out to Las Vegas, kind of give you a taste of the vibe, the feel out here. It's been a hell of a weekend. We got Luke Combs tonight. We're going to that. Can't wait for that. But it's been a hell of a weekend, and hope these two podcasts kind of show that energy out here in Vegas. It's been great.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say before we throw it to you guys, there'll be no outro, so don't plan on that. But just hopefully the audio works well. There was some noise going on, especially towards the end of certain interviews, so we did our best to make it work for you. It's all live on set, and we are not professionals. Second off, to what Ryan said, you get the auction idea from a show, you get the main event idea. Like, we couldn't bring you the MTM part. There's a community here that's really cool. I know that, and I'll just kind of go on a little tangent here. The NFBC has a reputation. People think it's a hoity-toity, high and mighty. Like, there's some people don't like it, is what I'm going to say. And I think people need to kind of open their eyes to what's going on here. It's getting younger. It is a community. It's a very good community. Yes, it's high stakes here in Vegas. That's not for everybody. I get it. But the people here cannot be more accommodating, more friendly. They all have the same interests as we do. Like,
yep.
We just hang out when we're not in the draft rooms. There's a circle bar we hung out at. We hung out at a party last night that was Kate. Like, I think the stigma needs to go, is what I'm trying. So I'm going to get on my platform for 2 seconds. But it's a great time here. I highly recommend it. Like, you don't have to draft. Ryan and I didn't draft last year. We ran into a lot of people walking around the main events that weren't drafted. So, like, you can come hang out for the weekend without drafting.
A couple folks that live in Vegas and weren't even drafting. They just showed up. They're local. So
I just want to throw that last part in there before we sign off. It's been an amazing weekend. We've had a great time. We got our Listener League 12-team standalones. that feels like it's turned into a family. It's only league year two, but I feel like it's gonna be like a you know, a family league when times are all said enough. We keep doing this every year. So thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoy. Hope the audio is good. We're back with you guys Tuesday night with another episode of Bubba and the Bloom. It's Bloomboard season, right? It's Bloomboard season, which can't wait to see what you come up with that for this weekend.
We're doing player shares.
And beer bets.
Player shares and beer bets.
Sorry, Bloomboard. That's
Tuesday.
The following week.
Come on, don't throw these curveballs at me, man.
Hey, the high noons are good today. But we'll leave on that note. Make sure you guys follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Podcast Bubba Bloom Pod. Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm B. Dantrick. Enjoy the interviews. We'll catch you guys next time. See ya. All right, the main events have wrapped up in Las Vegas, at least the 8 live mains on a Saturday morning. We're doing a little recap, a couple guests coming our way, and we had to get the first one on here to run it back from last year. Mr. Dustin McComas, how did things go today for you?
Woo, boys, it's great to see you first off. I think you guys saw me. I was in hell in picks rounds 3 and 4. Well, not 3, but 4. Because the pitching was just flying. And, you know, the unique dynamic of drafting a main event in one of these big ballrooms is that all the leagues are drafting at the same time. So you start hearing these names. And I'm sitting there. I've got my cue lined up. I'm hoping for Jesus Lizardo. He gets called out the draft beside us. And then the guy drafts him in ours. I was like, all right. You know, maybe George Kirby. You know, Kirby gets called out to the one to the left of us, and then he gets picked here. I was like, oh, man. So it's like, you know what? It's my only main. I'm ride or die with Kyle Bradish. We're going to go with Kyle Bradish. I just knew that where I was in the draft, I liked my builds a lot more if I started hitter and then either Mason Miller in the second round if he's there. If he's not, top starting pitcher available, and then just cross your fingers and pray that a closer that you can tolerate is there in the third round. So David Bednar being there in the third round, I took him, and I knew I wanted a starter coming back because the way the pitching was going, and in these leagues, you have to wait so many picks to come back to me. I picked 12th, so I'm talking 42, 49, then 72, 79. And I'm looking at the starters that are available in that range. Like, I don't really like any of these guys that are going to come back to me. So pushed up Bradish. It's fine because it's one of my guys. And then from there, things kind of played out the way I thought they would. But this, I'm such a big catcher guy. I've done probably 15 drafts. This is the first draft I've done where I did not have two good catchers. It's just where I was. Yeah. It's like, do you want to take a second closer or a second catcher? And it's like, okay, I'll wait for the next guy. And then Alejandro Kirk goes right ahead of me. And, you know, I took Yandy Diaz instead of him. In hindsight, I might have wanted that one back. But Diaz was just such a screaming value to me where he was one in the 11th round. The batting average, the lineup position, the counting stats – you get a little of everything for him besides speed. So not a traditional draft for me from the catcher side, but everything else kind of went according to plan. But it was just a wacky draft, as these ones are in Vegas, where the pitching, it starts flying at all levels of the draft.
It's funny because so the beauty of these live events is, Bubba and I, we're walking around. You can see people squirm over their picks. And Dustin, you were squirming over that Kyle Bradish pick. And it was funny. Like, I was watching you. This sounds creepy. I was watching you the whole time. But, like, you basically used the entire clock. And I could see you think, because we have been DMing each other about, like, Kyle Bradish on our show is a major point of contentment. Bubba is not Bradish. And
beer bet guy, right?
Huh? Yeah. And I am very much pro Bradish. And we've been talking pretty much all offseason on how much we love Bradish and Cy Young odds and all this stuff. It was just funny kind of seeing you kind of sweat this out at the fourth. I was like, I know he wants Bradish, and I think I know he's doing the calculus in his head. Is Bradish going to make it back to me in the fifth? It was just really cool to kind of see, again, that sounds bad. It was really cool to see you, like, struggle over that decision. I could see exactly what you were thinking of what was going through your mind.
Well, I'm not surprised that you could see it on my face because it was just
it did look like you were in hell.
Yeah, you don't think in the fourth round you're going to be put in that sort of predicament. But when you're picking on the ends, you really just have to think through the next, like, 30 picks and, like, what positionally is going to be available to you. And, like, I'm just not a big Dylan Cease guy. My consideration was, do I double tap closers here and go with Aroldis Chapman? And then I'm thinking, like, well, the pitchers that are going to be there in the sixth and seventh round, I don't really like a bunch of those guys either. So, yeah, I'm not surprised you could see it on my face. It's like, oh, man, I'm already in the fourth round. I'm sweating it to the final seconds here of who to go with. So, but I kind of like the structure of the flow of it. But those are the sorts of decisions you're kind of faced with throughout the draft.
So one of the big themes we've noticed is walking around the boards is like, yeah, rounds two through four pitching. And so you were part of that, right? With Christopher Sanchez, Bednar, yeah. Bradish in the 2-3-4. And then Pete Fairbanks shortly after that. Right, what comes up must go down, hitters fall. What was, I mean, talk to your hitting and like kind of, you had to build your hitting through round 7 through like 16, the core of your bats. Mm-hmm. How did that feel with pitching getting pushed up so much?
It felt okay. It's something that as I had done a few DCs, I kind of grown accustomed to doing. And my thing is like when you plug in these first round bats and you look at, you know, I use you guys as team tracker all the time. I also use Rudy at Razzball's draft tool. And when you put in these first round bats, it gives you so like value in every category. And as I'm looking, like I like to me is like I really like Brent Rooker. I bought Brent Rooker in an auction draft last night, but I was like, he doesn't give me all five categories. And if I pass on a Kyle Tucker or a Gunnar Henderson, I ended up taking Tucker in the first round because I knew I liked a lot of the shortstops late. If I pass on one of those guys, the next bat I'm getting is not giving me five categories. So it's like, I really like the way that my draft would work. It's like the hitters, it's like, all right, I knew I really liked a lot of those outfielders in that round 7 through 10 kind of a range. Yep. I got George Springer. Yep. I got Joe Adell for the power. I knew later on, I really wanted the group of Adolis Garcia, Willier Abreu, Dalton Varsho. Those guys I felt were good values. So I knew that I wanted to get outfielders early, try to get two good catchers if I could. And because there are so many guys later in drafts, like you kind of see what falls to you at first base, second base, all those sorts of spots as well, and just fill it in from there. So I knew positionally I wanted to get outfielders and catchers because I knew I really liked how all the other positions kind of were and later in the draft when people might be pushing up starting pitching.
No, it's kind of like that's the auction mindset. You did auctions yesterday with I think you weren't in either one of ours actually somehow, but I want to ask you. I told you and James Anderson earlier. I was listening to your guys' recent show, and you hit on a couple of the guys you talked about on that show. And this is more of like a people that still draft us next week slash maybe in early season stuff. So like you get Emi, who I have no idea what to do with, and I know you've talked extensively about him. You get Shane O'Mac, McClanahan, who I'm really actually. I've never been a McClanahan guy, but I really enjoy what I'm seeing this spring. And as you know, you used to have to take him as your ace. He's now your SP4.
Yeah.
Like I can live with that.
Yeah.
You took Woodruff in round 10, I believe, 12, sorry. But you paired up a bunch of guys that maybe there were question marks surrounding, but you've obviously done the research on. I don't know if you want to hit on a couple of those guys. Just kind of what are your thoughts here for anybody that's still drafting? Like, what do we do when this guy's on the board?
Yeah, it's a great observation because that to me was the toughest decision I made in the draft was Brandon Woodruff because he just kept falling and falling and falling. And it's part of this, like, well, he's falling for a reason. But you just have to ask yourself, it's going to reach a point to where are you comfortable with taking him? And for me, he basically fell a full two rounds past, I believe, his max pick recently. And I was like, yeah, I am concerned about, you know, him building up and the velocity dip in the fourth inning and that sort of deal. But having those starting pitchers already, having a base of a Sanchez, a Bradish, Emi, McClanahan, I know those are riskier guys. But if you're taking, I think the error is if you just take one of those guys and it's like, okay, this is my SP2, you know, taking these guys as SP3, 4, 5. If they all work out, I'm cruising. If 2 out of 3 work out, I'm still in really good shape. If 1 out of 3, okay, I can deal with that. I think the risk is that if you just load up on all of these guys and just kind of prop them up to levels. You know, like if Emi was my 3 or McClanahan was my 3 and then Woodruff was my 3 or something like that. But those guys, that depth, I mean, this is something that we are competing for an overall prize. So these guys definitely have some upside. And I'll freely admit, McClanahan throwing 5 innings yesterday kind of sealed the fate for me. He's got through the spring. He's fully healthy. He's in the rotation. I felt good about that. The Woodruff one, to me, we'll see. That one in a month, I might be like, oh, man, what was I doing? But the risk – having 4 starting pitchers already, I feel like I could take that risk.
No, totally. That's why I just wanted to get it to, like, to the listeners because there are people that look at these boards and like they wonder what's going on and you might have questions, but you built the base to take that mm-hmm. chance that you mentioned the overall. And it also frees you up later in the draft. Like we saw, there's so much yellow at the bottom of the board. You were able to pepper some potential hitting values.
Yeah.
So that's beautiful. Last question I have for you, then once you go enjoy the rest of your Saturday in Las Vegas. Real quick, what was your favorite favorite pick, and what's the one pick you're looking back on already? Because it's a 15. There's going to be a lot of moments like, what was I doing? What was your favorite pick, and what's kind of the one where you're like, I don't know if that was a good idea?
I talked about the Woodruff one, and I feel like my process is okay, but that's one I'm just like, I don't know if I made the right one. Luis Garcia Jr., I thought that that was a good value where he went. I needed some speed. He's going to get first base. He's going to have corner and middle infield. But I also would have really liked to just take another pitcher there as well. So that one to me was one I was kind of like, And then just not maybe the Yandy Diaz and not Alejandro Kirk. It's just such a good feeling having two solid catchers, especially Kirk when he's going to have the batting average. But I was okay. I was like, I'm going to wait at this point. And I took Victor Caratini, who knows? He might end up playing some first base, might DH, might provide a little bit of value there. But the Luis Garcia Jr. went later on because there's so many second basemen throughout the draft. And then that Woodruff one, that could be one that, like, I might look like a genius in 3 months, or I might be like, what was I thinking, having tagging in a guy that was throwing 88 miles an hour in the fourth inning of start recently. So the good thing with him, though, is that I feel like his whip is going to be in a really good spot. And that's one thing I wanted to make sure I drafted in this draft was a good whip foundation.
It's a great point. You obviously know what you're doing. You made it to the CLQ 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years now. Feels like two auctions ago. So you got a good team going here. I like the strategy. I like the risk-reward upside, I guess, as we put it. But we'll wrap it up there. We'll let you get running on the weekend. Thanks for joining us. As always, good catching up with
you. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. You guys do amazing work. I use your tools all the time. I listen to all the podcasts. I got hooked up with an awesome koozie.
Bubba and the Bloom koozie. Gotta have that.
Yeah.
I do understand you're rocking the Texas. You're rocking the burnt orange. I got a big game today, so good luck with that.
Yeah, tip off against the Zags. So I'm about to go hammer Texas on the spread and hope my wife hasn't gambled all of our money away. So a long night of beers ahead of us.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, next guest on tap for us tonight. He had the ninth spot in a draft. He was next to a guy that just won the draft champions overall last year. So that's got to be exciting. But the man that we know is Booms. Jason Anthony, how are we doing after a nice main event?
Bubba, the come down from the draft is always great, isn't it? This is best time of year. It's always sad it's over, but really like the team put together. Definitely, draft usually throws some curveballs. This one was no exception.
I guess first question before we even talk about your board, because I was talking to you about a couple weeks ago or texting or something, and when I got to watch you last year, you were doing just auctions. You did two in one day and everything, and we went and had brunch. We weren't even here for the first start of the main event. And then this year, you're like, nope, we're doing the main event. So you did an auction yesterday on Friday, then the main event on Saturday, just for the average Joes out there that don't know. What was the difference for you between the two?
Oh, everything. The auctions are, you have to be engaged on every single bid, every single pick. The main event, you can kind of wander around between picks. Usually, at minimum, have about 15 picks between your pick. So you can get up, use the restroom, go grab a snack or whatever. Auction, you can't walk away at all. So their auctions, as you know, are much more mentally draining. I know you and Ryan were talking about that, about how you felt after that, just kind of mind melted. I did two auctions yesterday, so you can imagine how my mind felt. But it's a labor of love, and we love every bit of it. So, yeah, it's good.
All right, so before the screen just went blank, I noticed that you actually went three hitters out the gate. And I only mention that because, A, I usually am known for waiting on pitching. But a lot of people around here, when you go to a lot of these boards, they're getting pitching early, at least one pitcher, sometimes three pitchers. Depends on what you're looking at. The gentleman next to you, as you mentioned, went heavy. But you did the opposite. You went with the three hitters out the gate, then you attacked pitching. Was this your plan the whole time, or was this kind of how the board flew?
No, it actually went off kilter pretty quick. At pick nine, I was planning to get an Ellie team. I was torn between him and Crochet. And J-Ram fell, and so I took J-Ram, already having another share of J-Ram, not the plan. I was planning to go hitter and two because I knew all the good pitchers were going to be pushed up, so I was really happy to go J-Ram and Churio, thinking coming back in three, I was just going to take a good starter. Well, Kyle Schwarber fell to 3-9, and everything flipped on its head, so I was going to take Cole Reagans there, and I could not pass on Schwarber, so here we go with the three-hitter start, and now I am scrambling and pitching.
This is the latest I think I've seen Kyle Schwarber go, and we've walked around all these draft boards, especially after Yordan Alvarez at the same position. do you have much Schwarber? Like, I don't, but I absolutely would have done that.
I actually got him in my first main when I took, who'd I take? Paul Skeens at pick six, and I took Schwarber in the second round and paired him with Trey Turner in the third. I absolutely love Schwarber. I had no thoughts of him being there. I mean, there was an outside thought of taking him in the second round. So it's always nice drafting with an Astros fan that takes a Yordan in the third round ahead of Schwarber. So
that's correct. Nice. Team three is a noted Astros fan. All right. So your first three picks are hitters, and really expect that. The common theme with your two first pitchers, Dylan Cease and Framber Valdez, kind of those boring volume type guys, guys that I like. Was that by design? Because you're like, oh crap, I don't have, you know, I've technically waited on pitching relative to the rest of the draft. I need to get stable and build that base.
Yeah, you're trying to build that base of strikeouts, that base of wins. I was kind of hoping Yuri Perez fell to me in the fifth. He was one pick away. But getting Dylan Cease and Framber Valdez is great with the wins and the strikeouts. But my whip, I knew I was in big issue to start that. They're both about a 1-2 whip.
And Shota.
Yeah, and so I was praying I was going to get Shota or Rasmussen later. I had to play the ADP game and not push him up too high to try to get the hitter. So I actually took Will Smith in 8, and luckily Shota made it back to me in 9. I was able to take him. So still, even with Shota, I'm scrambling. Really tried to build the staff backwards from there, knowing I was going to take a shot later on stashing either Cole or Rodon. I think that can be a big whip help. And then I fell into Connolly early after the break, and I absolutely love him this year. Could be huge, but I gotta bide my time until that.
I'm going to ask you about one of your later picks. Usually late picks don't matter as much. They'll be dropped. But in, you know, the main events, guys will take their shots and see what happens. I'm just curious because, like, Phil Dussault in our auction yesterday got Chris Martin for a buck. I heard Chris Martin's name mentioned between, like, picks 20, rounds 25, 28. You got him at 27. I understand Robert Garcia isn't the bill of stability. But are you how long would you stash to Chris Martin for the listeners that are going into the season since draft season's almost done?
You know, I won't stash him long. It's kind of a two-pronged pick, though. If he does come out and get an opportunity to close games, that's a win. But with Cole, with Early, I need guys that can pitch the first couple weeks at least. And so Martin at least is going to have good ratios, get some strikeouts, maybe pick up an easy win. And, hey, if he can get me 10 saves throughout the year because he's splitting time, you know, I waited on my second closer with Clayton Beter. So I do have some save issues, but I think I got guys that can get it done, and then you're now you're fabbing it through the year. No claim taken.
I'm glad, Bubba, that comment didn't get made. Yeah, I'm glad you weren't not holding a mic when you just said what you said. My goodness. All right, last thing for me, Booms, on the pitching staff. So you start later, you get the stable guys, you get Cease, Framber, Shota, Robbie Ray, and then you kind of go with two upside, right, with Senga and Gerrit Cole. General theme, not even those two guys, great spring training for Kode Senga, velocity looks good, and same with Cole. I mean, throwing like one inning, but he is now pitching and healthy and velocity's there. How much do you weigh the spring training, velocities, results into your process? Because you obviously took two guys that are trending correctly this spring.
Yeah, I actually track velocity in spring. I think it's a big thing for health purposes. Senga, just 2-3 years ago was an ace. And he's back to throwing 96, 97. Again, he has a little whip issue, but I couldn't pass the opportunity to take Senga. You know, at the end of the day, we're playing for an overall here. The league title is great. Everybody wants to win it, but you got to take those shots and get, you know, the home runs. And that's what the Gerrit Cole pick was with Senga was, hey, I think Cole's going to be back in May. The Yankees have no reason to slow play him. They have a tough division. He's already throwing. I cannot see him having multiple starts in the minors. Like, it's just the narrative on that. Just it looks like it's the timeline, I think, is much sped up from everybody's anticipating.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Cole Rodons, I've been kind of tempted more often than not in the last few drafts. Last question I have for you, and I asked Dustin, I'll pretty much ask every guest, just the old boring cliches, but what's your favorite pick? Probably Schwarber, but what's your other favorite pick? And then what's the one you're looking at going, man, I probably should have gone a different direction?
That one's tough, Bubba. You know, I'm not much of a second guesser in the draft. I really, coming out of the break, we're sitting there and Connolly Early and Cam Smith were still there, and I only had three outfielders. I really like Cam Smith this year, But knowing what I had in my staff and the whip, I struggled with that with Connolly early, and he fell to me, so I took the shot, but I did sacrifice Cam Smith, and so I was just trying to figure it out in outfield after that. I think one of my favorite picks was Jake Berger in the 20th. I was not a plan, and then you know the second favorite was Torkelson, I believe, in the 16th. Both of those fell forever, and I waited on first base and just worked out perfect.
I love it. Yeah, no, big Berger fan around here, so no qualms there. But, man, thanks for joining. Go enjoy the rest of your time. I don't know when you're heading back, but good time drafting with you yesterday. I think you have more drafts to go. Are you all done?
One more auction.
Tonight or tomorrow?
Today.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. He's a maniac, folks, but he's damn good. Make sure you listen to him on FTN Fantasy with the one and only Vlad Sedler. And thanks for joining us, Booms.
Appreciate you, too.
Okay. All right, Booms is gone. He went boom, as they say. We got another guest coming our way here. He's the bullpen guru himself, good old Dom Rello. Dom, how was the main event?
I'll need to put those bullpen guru resources to test here with this, how I drafted. I think of the people you've interviewed, this one might be the most, one of the more interesting builds.
Yes, it is.
It was not according to plan whatsoever, but I think it turned out okay.
Yeah, this is why I love it, because we started out with Dustin. He did a lot of heavy pitching. We talked Booms. He went three hitters early and then went pitching. We were kind of commenting most rooms you go to around the main event. If you don't take a pitcher in the first round, but usually by like round five, you got three pitchers. Or so like you're building your core. Now, Dom went a different way. He had five hitters out the gate, followed by five pitchers. So in the end of the 10 rounds, he met his quota probably. But you said it wasn't part of the plan. Where did the plan deviate? Because you went Ellie, Schwarber, Alonzo, Langler. So you got like Ellie and Duran. You had tons of power and some speed, obviously.
Yeah.
So your base is great offensively.
Yeah.
Where did things deviate for you?
Round two. Right off the bat, round two. So the plan initially was I was going to go Ellie at seven. And then I told myself I would either take an elite closer or a starter round two. I didn't expect like a Sanchez to be there. Obviously he went at the 15-16 turn there. But I would have taken Sale with Ellie, but Sale went picked before me. So then I looked at the board and I said, hey, to this point only Edwin Diaz and Miller had gone. Maybe I can push my luck a little bit, grab a little more power. I'm always chasing power in these leagues. Push my luck, see if I can get a closer round three. Maybe a Munoz, maybe a Devin Williams falls to me. So I grabbed Schwarber round two, and then everything went sideways from there.
No, it's interesting because you mentioned the Chris Sale part. Sale went to the eighth round, a seventh pick of the second round. And just off the top of my head, that was one of the earliest Sale picks in the entire eight drafts that took place here at the main. So the fact you were looking, we saw Booms just got Schwarber at 3.9 in his. Like he fell like a ton of bricks.
Right.
But so you mentioned you deviated. Obviously, that's what you have to do in these drafts. Did teammate, Mr. Yellow Brick Road himself, was the way he drafted affecting you a lot throughout the early start? You mentioned the Sale part, but did that continue?
I was getting it from both sides. So then round three, I went Alonzo, but I kind of was looking at the pitching board and I was like, all right, maybe Cease is there for me round five. Obviously he goes the pick before me round five. I told myself I'd push up a closer in that Helsley, Hoffman range, possibly to round five, but I just couldn't pass up Duran there at round five. And I just kind of told myself, like, I'll just figure out saves later. So I don't know. I was constantly like the team six in front of me actually sniped me on Cease, Sal Perez, Glasnow, all the pick before me. So it's just brutal. Like you have to know that you're going to get put into hard spots in these live mains, and you have to just be comfortable with like pivoting. Like you can have a plan, but you also have to have a backup plan to a backup plan to a backup plan. And, you know, like I said, it wasn't what I expected, but I think it turned out okay, actually.
So let's talk about your relievers, Mr. Bullpen Guru.
Okay.
So you went Trevor Megill in the 10th.
Yep.
Robert Garcia in the 13th.
Yep.
And then one of the biggest risers in Vegas, one who was I was really trying to get in my auction last night, you got Paul Sewald in the 17th round.
Yeah.
So you can defend your choices here, but to me that Sewald choice in 17, like, how confident are you in those first two that you then took Sewald as your third?
I think it's kind of a combination of I'm still a little concerned about Miguel, like, injury-wise and role-wise. Like, yeah. if he's pitching on opening day, my opinion, I think Miguel is going to be the Brewers' closer.
Agreed.
But I'm very cognizant of the fact that he had a flexor strain at the end of last year. And so when Sewald was there, it was just kind of like, this is a decent enough price for me to just take it and have it and not have to continue to speculate. Just because I knew, like, rounds 20 through 30, I was going to have to load up on starters to the extent possible. Yeah. So to get Sewald, who I think will have the job on opening day, it was too good for me to pass up there.
Yeah, I took Garcia in my auction last night, and like I said, I tried to get Sewald too. I was trying to do the same thing. I just ran out of money. Freaking Waxman had, I think, a $320 budget, but that's a separate
Canadian translation
thing. Yeah. But I think, and for drafters out there kind of following this, I think that's the wise pivot to make, is if you get shut out on these closer prices, like, get a third one early and hope that obviously if 3 out of 3 hit, it's freaking awesome, especially if in an overall.
Right.
But more likely it's like 2 out of 3 hit and you're fine. Yes, you wasted an extra pick like in the 17th or 13th round to get there.
Right.
But I think like that's a fine pivot if you get shut out from the, you know, top two tiers of closers.
Well, and I knew like I'd have to get two more. If I didn't take Sewald there, I'd probably be speculating on two roster spots the last 10 rounds. So just to get it and be done with it, it felt okay.
Yeah, no, and I want to go back a second here, because when you took those five hitters, you did a really good job of going with McLean, Gossman, Rasmussen, Trevor Rogers. Like, it's maybe not any ace, but it's a lot of twos.
Right.
Like, so you peppered that range before it disappeared. But then what I want to jump down to is, your later pitches was Connelly early, who's an up and down. Like, we don't know exactly what the Red Sox are doing.
Right.
You got Merrill Kelly starting on the IL, but he should be fine just because he started late in the spring. I'm not worried. Didier Fuentes, he's going to start in the bullpen. It's still electric spring.
Mm-hmm.
Scherzer, we know Scherzer has fought. But then you also go Buehler, Lauer. Lauer's in the rotation. Buehler made the team, should be.
Yep.
And Brandon Williamson. So my point I'm trying to make is you went to a lot of, I guess, I don't know if risk is the right word, but there's question marks with all of them. Is that a normal strategy you would do, or are you just saying, okay, we're going to see what happens early, these are easy drops, or you might have hit on something?
Kind of both. So, like, if you look at Walker Buehler's first couple weeks, it was just all matchup plays, really, like, that late. So, Walker Buehler matches up against the Giants at home for his first start, and then he has a two-start week at Pittsburgh and versus Colorado. And like, he's looked decent enough as like a fifth starter. He pitches in a good park. And then they have at the Angels the next start. So it's like a good enough start. So it's just really like getting a head start on streaming pitchers. Like, that's what those last three picks were for me. It was, I think Lauer has, I think he has Colorado as well at home. So yeah, Lauer's first start is against the Rockies at home. And then he has a two-start week the following week, but it's versus the Dodgers and versus Minnesota. So it's questionable whether or not I'll do that one. And Williamson, he also has, I believe he has the Marlins in, Miami. So yeah, it was just looking at late starts. So his first start is versus Pittsburgh. And then if he stays in the rotations at Miami and versus the Angels. So it's just getting a head start on streaming. If they're bad, I'll cut them. If not, maybe I struck gold, you know?
No, I love it. That's why I know draft season's almost done, but people are still drafting this week. But the combination of these guys, you could look to fab if you want to. Because if you drafted early, no one was drafting Buehler or Lauer or Williams. Like, those guys are all available pretty much, at least in 12s. But it's just a good philosophy to start looking at the schedule and see the upside here and the streaming concept of your late picks, where some people like might get bored and take a bunch of these guys that they want to stash compared to stream. And that, to me, is a different game we're playing right now. Last question I have for you. I've asked every guy this, so I'll be the annoying guy that does it to everybody. Favorite pick, least favorite pick?
Favorite pick was probably just out of necessity. Like, I joked. I was like, sometimes the draft gives you gifts, and McLean round six there was, I think, a gift. Like, I needed a starter so bad. The first main of the draft year I did, I believe I took McLean in the same spot. And when I made that pick, I was like, that might be the latest Nolan McLean goes the rest of draft season. So to get him here, he was just a guy I thought would go up for sure. So that was kind of a gift. I don't know if it was my favorite pick, but it was a pick that I absolutely needed. So in that regard, it was my favorite.
What was your least favorite?
I guess just in retrospect, like what it did to my entire plan, like I just wish I stuck with my initial thought of taking, like, if I just took Cade Smith round two, I think I would have had less of a volatile build and I could have done the normal, you know, get a starter, get steal the aces, bases, closers, like John Fish coins. I think I would have just been more down that path. But like I said, in the end, I think it's okay. So I'm okay with how it ended up and, you know, interested to see how it turns out.
Yeah, you'll be fine. As we always, sorry, Ryan said to me forever, and a lot of people say it, when you leave a 15, there's going to be something you're going to be like, okay, I got to fix. And honestly, forgetting the closing situation late, pushing Seawald with Garcia, I think it's great. Like, you covered a lot of the bases. So,
yeah,
not worried there, but man, thanks for joining us. Yeah, the bullpen problem, guru, Dom Rello. Pleasure, and we'll have some fun tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to the concert. Yeah.
All right, guest number four on the dock. It should have been number one. I'm already going to catch flack for that. I can see where that one's going. But coming to us live after the bullpen guru, we're talking to the man, the myth, the legend. The man, the reason the NFBC is where it is today, some might say. He clicks on the wrong links and has a new Twitter handle, but we'll forgive him for that. He's the godfather himself, Mike Masato. How we doing, man?
Oh, good, boys. Good to see you guys. I got to say, I listen to you guys a lot. And you achieved the funniest moment, one of the funniest moments in broadcasting, podcasting, when you were telling the story about how Ryan broke his ass when he fell down the stairs and hurt his back. I was laughing out loud at his demise when that happened. You know, I don't know what would have been funnier, either you fell on the stairs or Ryan, and I think it was when Ryan fell on the stairs. That was highlight of broadcasting, but I heard that. It was worth it right there.
See, that's what we do so well, because it's not just let's read you stats. We bring our life into it, which mixes it up a bit. Yeah, he's still on a tennis elbow from trying to grab the rail, I think. But last night we got to hang out at the Godfather after party up in Vegas. Had a little cigar break with Mike, which was great. Just kind of chatting about the history of the NFBC and all the good stuff there. So it sounds like I'm joking, but you are a major reason why things, like even Mager in his speech today.
That was a nice surprise. I was busting his chops in New Jersey, and he said, wait, make sure I'm in your acceptance speech. And he said he was already written. He didn't tell me. Yeah. It was a nice acknowledgement. Nice stuff. But tells you what kind of community is. That's the kind of thing. You know, you got a guy like Mike comes in, phenomenal person, great guy, great player. You know, Dan Kenyon, you use knowledge of Dan Kenyon. Dan Kenyon was with it for me when I first started. The guy is a legend, you know, and bringing people in. That's why it's such a great community. You know, people coming in, like last night, you saw everybody hanging out, talking baseball, we're smoking Cuban cigars, we have a Swede, you know, talk. It's just, and I'm drafting at midnight and, you know, with other drunk people and, you know, coming back, it was just a great experience, you know.
Yeah, we know stuff. Duran Duran's your favorite band. We got that established.
Yeah, you got that established, yeah.
All right, let's talk a little draft here, though, for the listeners here. Mike somehow had the number one pick in the Midnight Madness and then in the main event. So when I say he's got an impact on no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But, this is the old Ohtani draft, and we saw there was another league here, I'll leave nameless, found a way to completely butcher an Ohtani draft, like destroy it. You did not. So what was your plan going into it? Because some people say you need to, like, make sure you dominate certain aspects because you get Ohtani at once. So what was your process on this?
Well, ultimately, when I thought about this, I was hoping that I would just get closers out of the way. Like, I've seen Phil, who had won six number ones, by the way, the great randomizer over the year. This is my 1 in 40 drafts.
Well, I already made that. He's got the number one pick.
There's always going to look. If I didn't complain, the NFBC wouldn't be where it is right now today. Okay, we'd still be doing 8-hour drafts. All right.
I'm old enough to remember those 8-hour drafts, and that was the only option.
The fact that it's because of my complaining, things change. Right, but the truth of the matter is, I was hoping that. But then, of course, all closers went, and it was like Williams, and I wasn't going to reach for like a second tier. You know, elite the closer, not elite there. So I went with the pitcher. So I took Ohtani and then Williams, and then Wu. And to get a, you know, nice diversification there, power, speed. You got a starter. You got saves. So that's a good. That's how I started it. I knew that was gonna go. If it wasn't the closes, it was gonna be that kind of start.
We interviewed McComas earlier. Kyle Bra- he's a huge Kyle Bradish fan. Took him in the fourth round. You took him in the fifth. Bradish, because me and Bubba are as far apart as possible on Kyle Bradish. I am pro Bradish. I'm on the right side of this argument. You are too, MTM. Bubba is obviously very wrong here. You must be a Bradish fan if you took him first pick of the fifth.
Look, the skills are phenomenal. The only question is how many innings, right? But in this day and age, as we see with innings, right? What do you? You're not going to get 180 innings at most of the starters anyway. So if you get 140 amazing innings, yep. Right, and great rate and ratios, that's another thing. You know, whip is category. You know, and that's it's hard to find that right. So if you're not and coming back down there in the fifth, I was happening. And I knew I was going to go Bradish there for sure. I have him in some other leagues. I mean, look, Phil's all over him too. So it makes you doubly wrong.
Bubba's already lost. The season hadn't even started. He knows he's wrong. So.
He was wrong before he got to Vegas, right?
Well, so yeah, that's what in many ways.
So, yeah, so that's why I started. I knew I was going to get Bradish. And then, batting average, obviously that's, with Bichette, solid. Just that's solid stuff. That's there in a catcher. Will Smith, and I got that. So just hitting really, solid guys, I think.
Other thing I got for you, I asked Booms a similar question two guests ago. He took Kode Senga in, I forget which round, but roughly similar round as you. You took Kode Senga in the 13th, and then you took Shane McClanahan first pick of the 9th. Obviously, two big spring training risers. Like, I don't know, would you have taken those guys 3 weeks ago? How much do you look at spring training, what those guys are doing, what the velocity is? Like, McClanahan, I think, went 5 innings yesterday.
Yeah.
Seems good to go. Like, how much did that weigh into?
Like, well, McClanahan, I haven't taken a lot. This is my first year of McClanahan, truthfully, in a high-stakes league. But, again, he's back. You can see he's back. That's a good thing. So, right there, you're looking for, like, an ace potential. If you can get someone there and like that late, when you're on the ends, you got to figure out how you're going to make up for all those guys that went prior to that, right? So McClanahan was a guy I was going to target there, and it's about where he's going ADP in these things now. And Senga, look, I'm a Mets fan. I didn't take him because he's a Mets fan, but the guy looks like he's got figured out the issues he was having. We forgot how elite he was for a period of time, and now he's throwing the upper 90s, and he's got back, he's got the control, so he looks good. So I want to push. I had him in New Jersey, and I knew he was getting pushed up more and more. Like, I was getting him 16. I think I got him in the 19th round of the 5000 DC or something like that weeks ago. So we can see, you get to these live events where the pitching goes, right?
Yep.
So it was.
A question I want to give for you, because it depends on your risk. Like, the reason I'm like out on like the Woos and Bradishes of the world is the risk at the price. Like, McClanahan, I'm starting to buy in on. Estevez, you talk about Senga, McClanahan's velocity up, Estevez is down. All these risk reward factors. Yep. When you go into a draft, like, I know some very successful players that say, I'm taking the skills and the talent, and we're going to see how it plays out. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if it does, we're shooting for the moon. I'm assuming that's the side you're on, but I'm not going to speak for you because I would never do that to you.
Yeah.
Is that kind of your approach going in, especially a main event where you're trying to win an overall for $200,000?
Right. That's the hit. I mean, like, you're that's how you win these. Like, last year, I had a really amazing showing in the main event here in Vegas, and I was drafted from the two hole last year, and unfortunately I happened to be in the same league as Greg Martin, who took third overall. So I would have ran away with that main event. But again, this is the thing: you made the right picks, but then the injuries, right? I had Sale, freak thing breaks, he's breaking a rib. I have Aranda got hurt. I had I had a whole bunch of guys as the season went, and then Senga went off the rails, and I had all these guys last year. But then you have your late round picks, like I had the George Springers. They have the guys that make you win late, right? So those are the guys. Like, you pick a guy like Eflin. This is a guy, he's not hurt now. He's like, you can see, obviously, he's a different guy in spring, right? And coming like that. Those are the guys you're going to shoot for. Because, yeah, I'm playing for the overall. I'm not playing to win the main event league only. You want to win for the overall. So that's what you do, right? And I'm not an Estevez fan, but he's the kind of guy that can go out there and still maybe fine. And, he's the guy, he got the job, and he could save 30 games, 35 games. So by back to him, I got the handcuff. I got Airsig later as well. I threw a little Riley O'Brien case there. So that's how it is,
Just got to set the scene here for people. This is pretty hilarious. We're all huddled over Mike's cell phone, which is perched up on two empty Coors Light beer cans. Looking at his league, which is pretty damn cool, shooting the shit after the draft. Bubba's going to probably wrap it up with his corny question. We just want to say thanks for joining us, MTM. And thank you, too, for not – you approached us about potentially covering the Midnight Madness draft. And
it took you about 15 minutes of watching the beginning of saying it was a good decision.
As we were in the room last night,
wise choice not to do it.
The show might have been canceled if we
were. Yeah, it was out of control.
It was
using out of control.
It was an absolute spectacle.
I didn't think it was going to be that bad. I really didn't think it was going to be that bad, but it was.
I'd heard about it, and it was good stuff. But appreciate you doing everything for NFBC and in Vegas and making a special thing and having us over last night.
Yeah, I wanted you guys to come out. I mean, it was great that you guys came out, you know, and not getting into it. Now you see why you come out. You know, you wouldn't ever want to miss it, right? It's just a great experience.
All right, so it's two questions. One, did Carter Gill actually sleep over at the place last night?
No, he actually staggered out of there.
Okay, because there were rumors this morning circulating.
Yeah, one of his classic lines, I think from last night I was saying that. The one that I can repeat. I don't think I can repeat the other ones he said.
No, you can't.
They came a point in the lead in the draft, so someone drafted up. I put a Puerto Rican player. He said, "Oh, I love Puerto Ricans. My wife's Colombian." So, classic Carter Gill. Like, I guess you got to connect the dots somehow there in the thinking. So that was a classic one. And then so the other ones we can't. I don't think we'll cut radio is out of there.
But
so
I guess my other question is on a serious note to end on here is like we joke about it, but you have impacted so many ways how the NFBC is where it is today. You talked about the clocks and expanding this. You've done so many factors to it. I guess at your angle, I'm not going to say how old you're turning a certain age this year. That's a highlight reel. Yeah. And
you can say it. It's going to be 60 years.
He's going to be 60 years old, and he looks better than me. So it's okay. The bar's not high over here. Yeah. But what else do you want to see the NFBC do next to change the game, I guess?
Look, I mean, I one of the things that's going to change is the randomizer software. That's happening. That needs to be upgraded a little bit because the way it's working, but it hasn't been updated in a while. But again, they've updated over time with tech. The draft room's come so far, and the good thing about the NFBC, they listen to their players, and they make changes in time. They may be slow on making some of these changes, If I was up to me, there would be nothing longer than a 2 hour clock at a DC in this day and age. We're an instant gratification society. Most people do not. We're all attached to our phones or devices. You don't need 4 hours. Most of these people need 4 hours to make a pick. It's a waste of time. But we'll see. That'll change. But there's going to be – I'll always be a stand for trying to do innovation and trying some different things. And I'd love to do Iron Balls in the main event. I think it would be the coolest thing if we were all out here drafted, knowing your spots on the spot in 8 leagues at the same time. People would complain in the beginning, and then they would love doing it. Oh, yeah. Stuff like that. It's just getting your draft spot instantaneously on the spot and drafting there. Like any unique features like that make it fun. That's there. And getting more coverage. It'd be great for these events. It's great. Baseball doesn't get its coverage. It does. But when they do the coverage, you can see several thousand people listen to that. I even asked you. I'd asked you to do the ultimate, too. I came to you because you guys do a good job there. And I had some great coverage with some young guys that are up and coming and been doing it for a long time, like Vlad and Toby, and this is that generation now, man. When I came in, we had none of this other stuff. You could do it now. It's like exponential stuff you can put out there. So I'll keep doing it. I'm gonna probably one of these days I'll just keel over at the table and I'll be like shit in my pants and changing my diapers at the table and stuff like that. Until that time, that's why I got to stay in shape. Yep. So. No, for the NFBC.
We need you around, Mike. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Great to see you out here in Vegas each year. And thanks for what you do. Look forward to chatting with you again sometime.
Keep up the good work, boys. Great to have you. Thanks for having me. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody. We have a very special guest joining us now live in Las Vegas. The man is an amazing Twitter inspiration to some. Well, no, because it's like funny. We joke around. I think we get along. It's more of a like back and forth. I think we buried the hatchet a long time ago. I like it because what this gentleman does is he exposes things that to some might seem obvious, but they're not because they're actually still being utilized in rooms. That's why he's preaching this. So like that's where I'm going with this. You might know the chuckle. It is the one, the only, Dr. Dave. Dave, how are we doing, man? How was the main event for you?
Thank you for having me, Bubba. Yeah, absolutely. It's good to be back on the mic with you. I don't know if we've been on the mic since my very first time.
It's been a while.
Ever on a microphone was with this man here. He gave me my start, back when nobody knew who the doctor was. Actually, that was before the whole Dr. Dave thing. Actually, what was that?
Before you were certified.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, before I got my official doctorate. Yeah. So, the main actually went, I think, very well. I feel like all the live mains are pretty difficult at times, but usually we have a harder time kind of executing our plan. And me and my partner, Tony, share a main event team together. So yeah, it went pretty much according to plan. We didn't get a closer until round 11 with Sir Anthony Dominguez. So I think that's really our only possible problem point. And we backed him up with Robert Garcia too. So we're feeling pretty good about that. And, yeah, everything else went really well. Ketel Marte fell to the end of the fourth. I love that. Sir with Bobby Witt, can't go wrong there. So everything's good. There's a pocket of pitchers that we love from rounds 13 and 19 that we really hit hard. And, I think that's going to be the key for us.
Yeah, no, you guys put together a great draft. Like you're very successful in what you do here with your, we call it the conglomeration or consortium, or there's many names for it. But you guys also do stuff on your own too. Like Jake's literally drafting, he's an auction right now. Everything's going on, and so it's kind of a tongue in cheek joke deal. But you guys do good stuff. It was a fun room because we already talked to Dustin McComas on the show.
Yeah. By the way, also an awesome player, Dustin. Like he was in my main last year, and he was leading for maybe third of the year, and he had some bad luck at one point, but like he is a legit, he's the worst person to try to fab against. It was him and Posma, and fabbing against those two was miserable.
That sounds great, because I did an auction yesterday. I have Posma, Hinkleman, Mager, and like it's just, oh my god, I'm absolutely screwed. I got the draft I wasn't worried about. It's the 27 weeks of hell.
Exactly. It's the in-season management that's so difficult. We pulled it out, but it was not fun.
Yeah, so we'll talk more about your team, but one thing I really appreciate about you is you just shoot it straight. There's like no bullshit. If it's on the table, it's on the table.
Yeah.
So like I loved your draft.
Did you saw my draft today?
Yeah, I went to there lot because I didn't know. I was right behind you. You were focused. You had your notepad out. Yeah. Like I was talking to Jake a lot.
Okay.
Anthony next to you. I'm a big a friend with.
So number two. T2.
Yeah. So I was watching his because he had a gift when PCA fell to him in round four. Because at least for his build, it was perfect.
Yep.
I have to ask you this.
Okay.
Then we'll get back. Team One put on a clinic on how to absolutely destroy an Ohtani pick. Like not even just like slightly hurt it. It went nuclear in that place. He was online, so he wasn't live. Thank God, because man, the questions and ribbing that would be taking place.
Oh my god!
And I'm sorry if you're a listener to the show. Come on the show. I want to know what your process, because almost half of his
team. Markowitz, I think is his name. I don't know.
Like that.
I've never seen that name before.
Half of his team is in the minor leagues right now.
Oh yeah,
like he can't field. They started,
and the other half is injured. Like I don't. We're all convinced that he thought it was a dynasty league, and he just got mixed up. Because, like, literally the last, I don't even know, 14 picks or something, I think he might have one player out of those 14 who can actually be in a lineup right now. It was crazy. I'm like, it's essentially we were in, like, a 14-team league. It's like, it's like when Jake had the rogue drafter in his league, and he was just, like, every single pick was, like, a round later than it should have been.
Last thing for Ryan's point, Dustin mentioned this. I want to get your thoughts on it because Jenny mentioned it off air also. I guess the blessing and the curse, though, of him giving you a 14-team league is if he realizes this is what's happening, he's going to have to drop most of them. So a lot of these guys that are in the minors, you're going to be able to pick up for a buck because they're in the pool for those that aren't new with an FBC. The first week of Fab, which is this Sunday, everyone's still available.
Right.
Once opening day technically hits, if they are not if they have not played in a game, essentially,
right,
they're not available in the pool until they play. That's why when rookies get called up, pitchers, so on and so forth. But these guys that are, if they're drafted and thrown back in the pool and started in the minor leagues, they're still available. So all of these guys that were drafted, like the 14, 15 guys, if he even puts 10 of them back in the pool, those are dollar guys you guys can get earlier than, like, me, say, in a league where I have to wait, and that's Fabapalooza for me.
Right.
You guys can spec. So how do you think that's going to change your approach? Because Dustin and Jenny were like, this is going to screw us up all year.
I'll be honest with you, until you just brought it up right now, it never even entered my mind. Like,
I really know what you were talking about.
Yeah, like, Jesus.
Well, it was like, Bloomfield, ask him about Fab.
What are you talking about? it makes sense.
Because that's a whole different process.
It is. No, man, that is going to be complicated for sure. Yeah, because he got Peyton. Like there wasn't like, but like Peyton Tolley was one of his picks. I remember that's going to be a big dollar amount when he gets called up. Yep. That could be problematic. But you know, we'll just have to figure it out as we go and figure out if we need to stash someone. We're very deep at starting pitcher, so I'm also not sure that we even need to go there. But yeah, it's something to keep in mind.
One of the things I like just walking around the rooms is not only looking at the draft boards, but like looking at the people's setups and everything. Like there's so many, like we've got, you're sitting at the table where a guy who had just like literally hundreds of pieces of paper tearing them up and throwing them on the floor.
He did?
Yeah.
Really?
And then you've got you've got crazy spreadsheets, you've got all this stuff.
And Sean Johnson, if it's the Sean Johnson I'm thinking of, he's like, in, he's an incredible, like, high stakes player.
It's wild seeing, like, the different setups that people have here. Yours is unique, right? Because you've got Tony right next to you, and I was kind of walking, I was behind you guys for a couple minutes just kind of checking it out. Like, how do you guys operate when you're in the middle of a draft? To me, it looked like Tony was tracking all the picks himself on his own spreadsheet. You had a separate one with, I'm guessing, players. I wasn't looking too much, but, like, how do you and Tony kind of handle in-draft management?
Yeah, I would say a lot of people kind of underestimate how tough it is to share a league with people. Like, other best friend, Jake, he says he doesn't play well with others. Like, he can't share. That's Bubba would understand.
Me and Bubba have talked
this.
About it, and Bubba says he doesn't play well with others. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm others.
Right, so. But Tony is very good at kind of, acquiescing when he needs to, but also pushing for his guys. And you have to have, like, could be coming from a common place of you're all on the same page, more or less. If you guys draft completely differently, it's not going to work. It's just not. Now, you do want someone who's going to be able to point out things that you miss, like your flaws and whatever. Like, you want someone who can kind of cover those bases. But, and we do talk about things like ahead of time. What if this happens? Where are we going to go from there? We could do this. We could do that. And we have arguments. Like, Tony and I have had some knockdown, drag out arguments on the clock before, which is never fun. But we also, like, we've been best friends pretty much since high school, the three of us. So, like, we know how to talk to each other. We know how to kind of get on the same page when we need to. And yeah, he built a custom sheet in Excel that's crazy good. Like, it is unbelievable. If you saw, he could sell this thing for like $400 or something. Like, it is so, so amazing. I don't know how to use it because I'm bad with technology. So I just have an Excel sheet with all of the players, both overall and then positionally. So I've got, like, the overall, and then I've got catcher, first, second, third for each position. And then I just, as they get picked, I delete them off the list, and I highlight my targets. And that's how I do it. So we both kind of come together on the clock and say, okay, what are you thinking here? Here's what I'm thinking.
The other thing that you did this weekend, Dave, is an auction. So you did your first, I think, first ever auction.
First ever, auction in every sport ever. Yeah.
This was this was our first live auction. We did it here in person, and we've done online before, but we talked about that last night on the podcast. Just wanted you don't even talk about your team, whatever. Right? What was that auction experience like compared to, and then having to flip back to a draft the following day?
I'm glad you asked, Ryan. It was miserable.
Again, don't need to go into detail. You can do whatever the hell you want with it.
But I'll be honest with you. I don't like chaos. And that's, auctions are fucking chaos. Like, you're just, it's just, I got DuPont yelling at me. It's just like, God, these fuckers, like, got me into this league. It's an ultimate auction, by the way. So for those of you who don't know what that means, it means I paid $5,000 entry fee to play my first auction ever.
We paid $1,600. That's the cheapest one they offer here in Vegas. Just to throw it out here. His first one ever. He didn't start at the bottom.
No.
He went to near the top.
Yeah. So, here's the thing. I do like a lot of what I got. I did not make in auction adjustments the way I needed to, and I just don't. It's hard. It's different. It's very different. And I don't know if it's to my strengths, but it's also my first one. I think I might be being a little harsh on myself because I always expect to do well no matter what it is. And here's the thing. Like, my offense is great. I shorted pitching way big time, and it was just a huge problem for the second half of the draft.
Yeah, no, the auction.
Or the auction.
Auction is a learning curve. It's like the first few I did, they were online. They weren't, like, live, but you sit there and you're like, that's so much second guessing. Is this what I really want to do? Now, after doing them for a few years now, and especially the live one, I'm like, I don't want a snake draft if I don't have to.
Really?
Like, it's a weird, like, I'll still do it, obviously, because that's our options majority of the time, but I'd rather not.
Okay.
Like, I thoroughly enjoy
all the time.
Because it's like, you'll understand this. So when you're looking at, like, ADP, because when you're snake drafting, for the most part, you're dealing with pockets, and sometimes you reach a little, sometimes you won't, but there's sometimes where you're in a draft, you're like, I don't really like anybody in this range.
Yeah.
And there's another range, like, I like almost all these guys in this range. Well, in an auction, you can get that range you like.
Fair enough.
And then skip this. And there's just something about that chess piece. Now, the downside is the mental part of it. Like, you guys were picked three today, so you get a long wait to your next pick so you guys can talk,
right,
hash it out, plan your next pick. Mm-hmm. When you're in an auction, it's 4 hours of you are in on every pick technically until you say no. Uh-huh. Like your brain has to be on for 4 hours. Yep. And that is a grind and a half to figure out.
So, especially when you don't have a lot of money and you're like, if someone throws out someone for a buck, I have to be ready to jump in at two immediately.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. It's better live though, because when you're online, it's you have to be a little clicks faster than someone else, and that turns into a whole other problem.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, no, it's cool. I didn't realize that was your first one ever.
Yeah, ever. Like no football auction, no online auction. I watched my friend Marcus do an online auction one time, and I was like, this is the worst. Like, it's just pure chaos. Like, because you can't even, like, there's no auctioneer. You know, like, you have to click a button, like the plus one or whatever, and like just shit goes wrong all the time. I just can't do that. Like, it's just too much chaos.
So I guess I'm going to transition back to your main here, because I kind of want to talk injuries with you, because this is something like you really are good at, like as much flack as a lot of us give you. I think.
Do you? I didn't know people really gave me flack over that.
I've stopped a lot for the most part.
yeah. Because, everybody gave me flack until they realized that I was right all along. Like, that's what it really comes down to.
Like, there's something to it. But this is why I want to ask you, because some people still like, well, you took so-and-so or you did this. And like, obviously, there's a price. That's like the $1 million man said, everyone's got a price. And you took DeGrom as your first pitcher, like round three.
I did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then your second pitcher, who was it again?
Joe Ryan.
Yeah. So shoulder, maybe. That's like question.
Back.
Yeah. Sorry, this time it's the back.
Shoulder, I would have been out.
Yeah,
shoulder,
there's where I want to ask you. So like, you went with DeGrom, who obviously full year back from Tommy John, massive innings increase, though. So some people have a question. Mm-hmm. Joe Ryan's the back, but he's already named day one star. I love Joe Ryan. I have no problems either.
Love Joe Ryan.
But like when you're going into these drafts, especially this, like I said, it was around three and five or whatever it was. So it was early in the main event because that depth of the pitching pool dropped so fast.
Right.
How do you approach these pitchers and be like, okay, they're fine here. Like you wouldn't take, say, maybe you wouldn't have taken DeGrom in round two, but round three. Like, I'm just throwing this as an example.
Yeah.
But how do you differentiate that as you're going through your drafts? Because eventually, like I've even seen you post boards and talk about like after round 15 or whatever, like, oh, this guy's definitely on the board now.
Sure.
But those early rounds, how do you sit there and go, okay, I know the risk here, but it's okay with this guy, but not at this guy, I guess.
It's really on a case-by-case basis. And so, like, with DeGrom, I think the only real risk there, in my eyes, is the age. Like, he's 38, and I think for some people that's a problem. I just feel like this is a guy who doesn't have a lot of miles on his arm lately because, like, he had the whole he needed Tommy John for years, and this is something that if you follow me, you probably know I talked about this a lot, you know, and he never got it, and then eventually he did. And usually you don't want guys typically the year they come back from Tommy John. You want them the year after. And so, like, I love DeGrom this year, and I have him as a top five pitcher. I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm very, very high on him. His curveball velocity is up 2 miles an hour. The last time that happened, he was over 40% K rate. Will he do that again? I don't know. But I just think that he's a whip monster. He's going to have a sub one whip. Like, I don't see a whole lot of risk with him. With Joe Ryan, it's back injuries are annoying, but they don't usually cost guys a lot of time. So for me, as long as it's not an arm or a shoulder, I'm okay with it.
So just selfishly, we have these things called beer bets that we do on the show. We argue all the time, just like you and your buddies.
I listen to your show. I listen to all of your positional reviews this offseason, boys.
Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah, we argue. We differ on players. We have totally different ways to go about things.
Yeah.
Our biggest debate pitching-wise this year was Kyle Bradish versus Cole Reagans, and it was pretty much all injury-related.
I think they're both awesome. For sure.
So we want to get your side to settle this. Our beer bet is Reagans versus Kyle Bradish. So I'm just curious for those two guys. Who are you hedging with?
So, I mean, for me, it's Bradish, for sure. Here's the thing. Reagans could be a top five pitcher, right? Like if he stays healthy, the skills are unquestionable, right? Guys coming off of rotator cuff injuries, it's like a 50-50 whether they're going to be okay or whether they're going to have issues. I don't like to take that kind of gamble as early as he goes, and I don't see much risk with Bradish. So, like, I feel like Bradish has similar upside without the risk downside. And I would have taken Bradish today over Joe Ryan had he come back, but he did not.
Okay. Does Cole Reagans making it through spring training, I think, pretty well change that for you at all? Because I'm having a little bit of like, he's looked good through spring. He's healthy right now. But
no, not at all. Like, a lot of times these things are, it's a wear and tear type deal. And like, you can look, and I think a lot of people see velocity and they're like, oh, he's fine because he's fine with velocity. That's usually not where you see it. You usually, you know, the velocity can still be good and the underlying injury concern is still there. And so you kind of got to train your brain to think like, okay, he looks like he's right, but is he? And I've just something via tracking it for the last 20 years, I kind of know what to look for.
All right. So speaking of Tommy John surgeries and whatnot, you have a big draft tonight.
Yeah,
it's coming up. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. You're gonna have to wait until I guess we get back from Luke Combs because they're waiting for Dom.
And are you guys gonna be part of this?
Yeah, no, not the draft. We're gonna be here to watch.
Oh, okay. So we're gonna do. I think we're gonna do it in my suite, so you guys can come up.
We'll check it out.
Yeah, please do.
Let's just have some fun with it because some people are like, why are you rooting for injuries? That's not what we're doing, people.
Exactly.
That's not what we're doing. It's called having fun with baseball. God forbid.
It's a part of the game. Yeah, that's what I always tell people. Like, you can't ignore injuries being a big part of this game. It's just a part of it.
Well, and that's where I'm going to kind of like twist it. Like, we're going to have fun with the draft part, but we can make this a fantasy part as well. What do you look, because you're picking guys, that it's the whole thing is who's going to have Tommy John, right?
I think Zach told me the specifics are, it doesn't have to be Tommy John specifically. It has to be an arm or a shoulder injury that knocks you out for the year.
Okay. So what are you looking for in a pitcher? So say if people still are drafting next week.
Yeah.
And these are people like you're going to draft in your Tommy John draft. So probably don't draft them in a big draft or something. What do you look for in these pitchers that says, hey, this guy's on the brink of something bad?
I mean, so the biggest ones, if you're specifically looking to avoid Tommy John, are going to be anything with elbow inflammation, elbow strain, flexor strains are huge. If you see any of that, stay away from guys with flexor strains. You know, Grant Holmes essentially put off Tommy John. He said, I'm not going to get the surgery. I'm going to try to pitch through it. I can tell you historically that does not go well. So, you know, Grant Holmes is now for where he goes in drafts, you can take him and say, I'll ride him until the wheels fall off and that's fine. But he would be a high pick in the Tommy John draft. Now, from a strategic point of view, we have to take 7 starters and 2 relievers. There's not that many relievers out there, and even fewer who really have big injury concerns. So I think my first pick might be Trevor McGill because I think that he is not going to make it through the year.
All right, that's good to know. I'm looking forward to it because I missed it. I missed it last year because you guys did it like right after.
I missed it last year too. I wasn't a part of it because
which is insane. How do you have a draft about Tommy John or whatever arm injury?
Yeah, right.
The good doctor is like the next door over, just finished the main event. How do you not have Dr. Dave at that's exactly
they wanted me to do it, but the time that they had available, we happened to be at Peppermill. It's one of our favorite local places
here.
And we just couldn't make it. But
fair enough.
Yeah. So they're like, this year we have to have you. I'm like, okay, I'm in.
All right, last question I have for you. Or how many more drafts do you have?
I have a main tomorrow, and then I'm main on Monday, and then that's it.
Are they both here in Vegas?
No, one of them's on. The one tomorrow is online, and then the other one is in Vegas. Yes.
Okay. Well, answer if you wish. If you don't, you don't have to. My question for you is, what's been your most targeted player in draft season?
So it's either going to be Sal Stewart and or Jacob DeGrom, I would say.
Okay, cool. I like it. A hitter and a pitcher. And
yeah,
the thing with DeGrom, I'm rooting for him. Like, we all love watching Jacob DeGrom. And to your point, you mentioned the ratios. It's one of those things, like, even last year, could he give us 130? Like, that's still going to be really good. Like,
yeah, he went 173.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Even like, so you're getting him in round 3. Like, as good as if he gives us 150, it's still worth the third round price.
That's what I'm saying, man.
So, like, I get it. And Sal Stewart, we'd all love to see. But we're going to let you get back to enjoying Vegas and everything. But thanks for joining us, Dave.
Thank you for having me, man.
And,
it's been too long. I really enjoyed talking to you guys.
I'll have to get you on Bench with Bubba one of these days and do a full form long interview again. But I saw you here. I told him, I said, we got to get Dave on. We got to talk some stuff because other people, we just went down the board. Like, Dave's a full, you know, consortium of stuff to talk about.
And I'll say too, I love that you involve my boys because these guys, you know, Jake and Tony and Marcus, they're all.
I need to get Tony on. We talked about this.
Yeah, you do need to get Tony on because Tony is like Jake. They're both very intelligent, well-spoken, knowledgeable players. I'm so fortunate to have like my best friends be playing this with me that we can talk every day about this stuff and like playing high stakes. Like, I started 20 years ago by myself and I brought them on and they didn't play for years. And then Jake eventually did a draft. And then, you know, later Tony eventually did a draft with me and then he did his own. It's just really cool to see your friends like blossoming on their own. They're, you know, they're not in my shadow. They're their own people. They're very good on podcasts in fantasy baseball leagues. They're all legit, really great players. So it's cool to share this experience with them.
Yeah, no, it's awesome watching you guys each and every year. And Jake's rocking the glitter jacket today, which is which last year was the first year we saw that. And
I gotta like, say, bro, I gotta tell you this. So, do you guys know Peppermill, by the way?
Oh yeah, I know about it.
Okay, yes. So there's like a lounge area, and it's kind of looks like you're on the inside of a disco ball. And I'm like, Jake, you're matching the decor of Peppermill. So we walk in, and the waitress goes, I remember you guys. And I'm like, it's the fucking jacket.
Yeah,
I
you know can't, you can't forget that.
And she goes, I remember your jacket. I'm like, I knew it. I knew that was why you remembered it.
Yeah. It's awesome. Always a pleasure catching up with you guys in Vegas and chatting. We'll have to do it again sometime, but thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Awesome.
All right, everybody. The final guest on the main event recap show. It's only fitting that we get the defending, reigning, 2025 NFBC main event overall champion joins us, and I'll say his name properly for the years that I have messed it up, Mr. Todd Hoppy. How you doing, man? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, Hoppy.
Doing great. For me.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. It's been about, heck, couple hours now since the draft's wrapped up. You can hear the noise behind us. They're tearing down the draft room, which was it's just great, but what's your thoughts? Because it's you know, you walked in there, you had to give your speech in the morning, which was awesome. You gave Guild so much crap, which is beautiful. But you had to give your speech. People know who you are. Not that they didn't know who you are before, but they definitely, like, you have a target now sitting at the table. So how did that go for you this time around?
Yeah, I mean, it was a unique experience. I had talked to Jim Tominey the night before. He's won an overall in the DC and the main event and the OC. And he sat next to me and got this really serious look on his face. And he goes, you know, the reason nobody ever wins these things back to back is they spend so much time thinking about their speech that they don't actually prepare their teams. And I was like, oh, God, I think he's actually right. I'm more stressed out about the speech than actually drafting a team. But yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It's so much fun to be in this room. I mean, it's fun to be in the live drafts, but when you walk into the ballroom and see 8 different boards up, and everybody's coming in, there's sort of a buzz. It's a lot of fun. It's a blast. So I really enjoyed it.
One of the I'll take you all back to last night. One of the coolest moments that I've had this weekend was I was talking to you and Scott Slezak at the MTM party last night. And so obviously you won the overall in the main event, and Scott finished second. And it was just really cool to kind of hear you guys go back and forth. Like, I was amazed at you guys' recall. Like, you remember players on not only your teams, but like on each other's teams, on the Guild's team, who was a competitor in the main. So just take us back, like, just real quick. We don't want to talk about too much about last year, but like, I mean, how was that just experience down the stretch last year? I know you had a lead, but you were worried about a few people. Greg Martin was one of them coming back up. It was cool to see you and Scott kind of go back and forth on that last night.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we play this, right? Like, that moments like that that are it's so much fun, and you know, you just become immersed in it, and you know your team, you know your competitors' teams, you know everything that's going on and how it impacts the standings. And I think that's why pretty much all of us play, is for moments like that when you're in a competition like that. And I mean, it was a blast. Like, I got a taste of it. I'd love to do it again. I don't take for granted that it could never happen again, but that experience was so much fun. It was a blast.
Yeah, I've never been in an overall competition on the NFBC where I'm like in the, I've never cashed in an overall names. I'll just cut that quickly to that point. But like DFS, I play a lot of DFS. It was maybe a decade ago I won a GPP that was very nice to win for baseball. And it's like, so you guys talk about the recall part. I can tell you exactly my starting lineup on that. I can remember I had the TV on. Yeah, this is like before split screen big inning. I had the TV on. I had the iPad out and my phone out watching the last. Jake Lamb hit a home run in Dodger Stadium, and then then Leody Taveras hit a 2-run single with the infield in Oakland to crunch it. Like, I remember all this stuff. It's just, so to your point, I'm like, I get where you're coming from. You don't forget this. You remember where you were, when it happened, all that kind of stuff. Because to your point, it might never happen again. So you got to live it up. That's why we play our fantasy game that we do.
A legend, Leody Taveras.
Dude, that's the point. It's like, it's so funny. Like, the players that do these little things for us, you're like, what the heck was I even thinking that day? But here we are. I digress on that one. Draft is in the books. I guess, how many mains have you done, or are you going to do?
I'm going to do three solo that I draft myself. And a couple others that I share with other people.
Okay.
Mostly let them run the ship. But it's the second of three that I've done. So
it's your second.
But I mean, the live draft is just a different beast.
Mm-hmm.
than the online drafts. You know, it's a different cadence. It's a different, I mean, I got a setup at home where I'm like, I'm walking on my treadmill desk. I got music blasting. Like I'm, you know,
you're in your zone. Yeah.
And in here, I mean, there is nothing, there is no zone. Like you got to lock in at the table you're at, but you're looking face to face at the guy who's going to snipe your pick. Right. And it's a totally different experience, a blast and a lot of fun, but totally different.
Now, like the way you started out your draft, we've kind of mentioned this with some other people. You know, we had some guys will go, we went pitching heavy. Some guys went hitting heavy. There's different, you kind of just like split it up as you went. Which is kind of more probably where I would draft if I wasn't just hitter heavy. I guess when I've done 15s lately, it's more of a I will diversify and pay attention there. Was the start of your draft, was this the game plan? Did you have to pivot? Because that'll happen a lot in these formats. How did that play out for you?
I think it mostly went to plan in the first 10 rounds. I think, you know, I mean, the one thing I want to be mindful of is not falling too far behind in any spot where I can't catch up, right? So, you know, I think you can make it work if you start five straight hitters and hitter heavy build. And I saw a lot of people do that. I think it just really becomes a struggle. Like you got to hit on those pitchers that you're finding later on. So my preference would always be keep options open, like give myself spots. If a guy falls past ADP, then I can pounce on that. Right. I mean, I think the one spot where it didn't, one spot where it worked was like Ketel Marte fell to the fourth, and I was like, yeah, I'll take that. Like, it's a perfect fit for my team. The spot where it didn't work as well was I got into the fifth. Palencia had already gone. Helsley had already gone. And I thought, I got to get a closer now. And the tough thing was Bryce Harper was still on the board. You had Matt Olson still on the board. You had Freddie Freeman and Devers. And in the fifth round, it's really tough to pass on those guys. But in the moment, I thought, I got to get a closer here. And so, you know, it's bouncing back and forth between having the flexibility to grab guys that fall, but also to make sure you're not falling too far behind in any one spot where I got to just sprint to try to catch up.
Love how you built out the staff. There's some Bubba in the Bloom components to this. So you started with Sale, and then you went with, our guys, Sonny Gray, and I guess more so my guy, Shota. And then Bubba's guy, Mackenzie Gore. So that's all after Chris Sale, right? Your SP1. Mm-hmm. Were those guys you've been targeting throughout? I know you've got one main left, so you know, feel free to not respond on certain things if you want. But Gray, Shota, Gore, like, was that the plan going in? You've got some pretty good volume and reliability there behind Chris Sale.
Yeah, I think there was a group of guys that I had listed that I figured would go in that range, and I would take three of them, whoever kind of fell in those spots. I mean, I did start to panic a little bit when some of those pitchers started to go in the early seventh, because then I was like, well, now that's starting to clear out, and I really do want to get three of these guys. When it got to Sonny Gray, I thought, well, as an SP2, like a guy who can get me volume behind Sale was a good fit, and then Shota to follow up to recover the whip, and then take Gore and get the strikeouts and swing it back in the other direction. So that's kind of how it went in real time. The reality is, like, the plan itself was just a bunch of pitchers here. You got to get some of them, like, sort of pick out whoever falls and whoever's there and whoever makes sense for the team at the time. So I wouldn't say there were specific targets other than those were the guys that were there, and I knew I had to take them if I wanted to build up a staff behind Sale.
Yeah, it's all about those. We always talk about pairs of pitchers and pairing guys together. Like Mackenzie Gore and Shota, perfect pair. You got the K's with Gore. Don't have it with Shota. Got the whip with Shota. Don't have it with Gore, etc. So like that. What was your second closer? How did the end game, or I guess the mid game closer market, work for you?
Yeah, I mean closers are so tough in the mains this year. I did not think that we would reach this point and have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 closers going the second round in my draft. I mean, it's just insane. And I knew going into it that I had a good sense that that was going to happen watching some of the other live drafts this week. And so I had to make the call, you know, beforehand. Am I going to plan to take one? And if I'm not, then what is the backup plan behind it? I knew that the second tier in the fifth round had been hanging around. And so I thought, pick out someone in that second tier. And then after that, the tier even behind that continued to get pushed up. right? And so, I mean, you can see it. There's not enough closers to go around for 15 teams. So you can see different teams reacted different ways. I mean, for me, coming out of the break, it was thinking about whether I wanted to try to take a guy who I thought maybe had the job but isn't a good pitcher, or is a good pitcher and maybe doesn't have the job. And so, you know, I mean, Sir Anthony went in the 10th. Brian Abreu went early in the 11th. And so I took Uribe and thought, you know, we'll see how this goes. But, I mean, it's not comfortable. It's not a great feeling. But those are the two guys, Hoffman and Uribe, that I landed on. And I feel like I'm in a better spot than some teams, definitely a worse spot than some of the other teams in the league.
Yeah, we've talked to a couple of guys that were either aggressive on closer or some that had to jump Paul Sewald to, like, make the comfort feeling. Yeah. So every team in these – there's 30 teams, so there's 30 closers, and all closers are created equally. So in these formats, every team's not going to be walking out feeling great. You got to work that one there. But just like one or two more questions before we get kicked out of our establishment here. I guess coming off the big win last year, heading into 2026, did anything change in the approach and the research and the prep to get here? Did you do anything different because maybe, you know, something changed in the way baseball's played? Now, I don't know, but my guess is, like, did something change for you, or did you stick to the plan and this is who we are, this is what got us here, we're going to stick to it?
No, I think the only thing that changed was the confidence that I came into it with, because I knew, you know, previously I didn't know what it would take to get to that point. And, you know, looking back at the draft that I had last year, I felt really confident that what I'm doing is working and that I could take the same approach in drafts this year and have pretty good confidence that it would work this year. Now we'll see if it actually carries over. But, I mean, that was the idea. I don't think there's anything that changes in terms of prep. I listen to a lot of Bubba in the Bloom podcasts and all of that. But no, I mean, it's the same game. Small changes from year to year, but, like, it's at the end of the day, it's the same game. You just got to figure out how you're going to play it.
Right? Yeah, I figured that would be the answer, but I wanted you to say it out loud for everybody else that thinks, like, I got to do something different. I got to do that. Yeah, players change. Statistical targets might change, but in the end, you still got to put the 23 guys out there. You got to figure it out. So I just wanted to, like, make that point to people that might think they got to, you know, take it to another level. I guess you want to be the best, but, you know, it's still the game's the game.
No, I mean, you do what you do best, you know, figure out what you're best at and the players you're best at identifying, and then just lean into that. Don't try to do anything too crazy. You don't have to do anything crazy to win these things. You just got to be better than everybody else at the things that you do well and building the team. At the end of the day, it's the 10 categories, right? Yep. So.
Well, we'll let you get back to Vegas on this one. Appreciate you joining us. Congrats on last year.
Oh, yeah.
Pleasure meeting you this year. Kudos and good luck this season.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate
awesome. It. Thanks, man. Oh, that's Todd Hoppe, the 2025 main event overall champion, folks. Catch y'all later.